Hi, I'm Amanda Pacheco.
This is Sheila.
Hello, it's Davida.
I'm Gina Lovato.
Hey, it's Alana Dunn.
I'm Caitlin Bailey.
This is Melissa Novak.
It's Sean Jacobson.
Hey, it's Bethany Nicole. And welcome to Sex Party.
And welcome to Sex Party.
Welcome to Sex Party.
Welcome to Sex Party.
Welcome to Sex Party.
Sex Party with your host, Dustin Rybka.
Hello and welcome to Sex Party. I'm your host, Dustin Rybka. How are you guys doing out there this week in the real world? I'm stuck here in podcast land, so I hope everyone is doing well out there in the actual, physical, tangible world. My guest with me this week in podcast land on the show is Serena Rose. Serena is a sex and relationships coach. We talk a lot about kink. Is there a difference between kink, taboo, and fetish? Does it fucking matter? We're going to find out. Serena opens up about how she got into this work. I do want to give a trigger warning. There is mention of rape and sexual assault. So just wanted to give everybody a heads up. Other than that, this episode is really powerful, really profound, a lot of fun, all of the things. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Serena Rose.
This week's conversation.
Serena Rose, welcome to Sex Party. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing so well today and I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you are here. Just like right off the bat, for the people who don't know who you are, they've never heard your voice, saw your face before maybe, could you talk a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. So my name is Serena Rose, and I'm a sex and relationships coach with a company called Sex and Love Co. It's run by our CEO, Alexa Bowditch. She's known on Instagram as That Sex Chick. Pretty awesome content, so check her out. And I'm so honored to be a part of the company and to be making an impact literally around the world. We have people who seek us out worldwide, which is really cool. And I help singles and couples connect to their authenticity, their vulnerability, and explore their kinks in ways that feels really good.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I was doing research on you, it was cool because there's a lot of kink stuff there, right? And I think that that's really important to explore, not only for this show, but just in general, because I think a lot of that gets lumped into other things or glossed over or whatever. So can, like, right off the bat, what is kink? Can we put a definition? I guess, you know, what is kink as a thing? And then what is kink as a practice, I guess?
Yeah, definitely. So kink is going to be something that is a little taboo. So just so people are aware, and maybe, I don't know what your audience is used to hearing, but
all sorts of fucking crazy shit. So we're good. We're good.
Yeah, definitely. So it's a way to explore different sexual flavors. And there is a multitude of kink relationships and dynamics. So it's pretty much just considered a taboo in the realm of sex. So an example to kind of paint a picture of what I'm talking about is someone who enjoys getting their ass slapped, for example. That could be perceived as kinky as fuck to one person. But to another person, that's their everyday lifestyle. Like, they get their butt smacked every day, you know? Right. So it may not be something that that person considers kinky. So that's why I stick to a pretty simple definition of it's just what one might consider to be taboo as far as sexual activities and experiences goes. And it's going to look different for everybody.
Yeah. And then I guess kink as a practice. Well, I mean, that can get kind of murky, right? Because there's people that are like kink practitioners, I guess. And then there's people who are just enjoy different kinks. So how would we define kink, I guess, in general terms, like as a practice?
Yeah. So again, as a practice, that could look different to whoever is perceiving it. So me being a sex and relationships coach, for example, someone might hear that and go, that's really kinky and I'm uncomfortable. Right. But another person might be like, oh, that's so cool. Take all of my money, you know? So it just depends on the person that is perceiving it. So what I see as practitioners who are more kinky is going to be vastly different to what another person sees as a kinky practitioner. So for me, someone who is a professional dominatrix or someone who leads sex scenes or puts together play parties, those are going to be the more kinky practitioners in my eyes. But again, like I said, it just is different for everybody. It's all inclusive.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, this next question is sort of like I don't call it a dumb question, right? But like, I have to ask it, I feel, because there's never really a good clear definition, but people always get confused. What is the difference between a kink, right, and a fetish? But this is like an important question, kind of, so.
Yeah, and there are no dumb questions. I encourage...
So agree. And I will ask a lot of things that might be termed dumb questions, but someone's got to do it to make the audience happy and better. So, hey, I'm right here.
Yeah, definitely. It never hurts to ask. So I encourage, especially in the realm of sex, love, and relationships, ask so many questions and understand what you are asking and seeking and et cetera. So, the difference between a kink and a fetish. So a kink is more of like a practice, and a fetish is more, I want to say, fantasy, but also can be a practice as well. So a fetish is something that really, really turns people on, and kink things can also turn people on too. So I love that you asked this question, and I don't think anyone's ever asked me it before. So I hope that that provides some clarity. So there's lots of different fetishes, and there's overlap. There's lots of overlap. So
yeah, and I think that's where some of the confusion probably comes from. I think... So the other day, I don't know what I was doing, but I came across one of those things that was the difference between a kink and a fetish. And I think what I read was a kink is something that turns you on, can get you off, right? A fetish is something that you absolutely need to get off. Would that definition sort of vibe with what you think with your professional, or no, is that totally off?
I think that is a fine definition and explanation. However, a lot of times people can have fetishes and they don't always need them to get off either.
Yeah.
So that's part of why there is so much gray area and confusion when it comes to sex, because we're so expansive and dynamic and everyone's so unique. And there is a lot of overlap when it comes to this.
Yeah. And like, you know, little info for people listening about the host. Like, I fucking love gray area. I think like that's the most, just in life in general, I just think the more gray, like what's happening kind of shit is not confusion, but sort of like, wait, does this mean like the best shit is gray? It's, you know, I almost said morally gray, but I guess that works too. But like, there's always the fun stuff is, it's just in that in-between space, I think. And I think in this case, you know, people want to define, oh, what is a kink? What is a fetish? And obviously I asked you those questions, but the fun is in the gray, man. Like, I love the idea of getting in that space and just like, you know, having a blast, because we don't need to define it. Let it be what it is. If you like it, do it, right?
Well, I think definitions and labels and titles, they help us being human understand and literally identify and make associations and have something stable to relate it to and connect to it with. And so, for example, like identifying your sexuality, being able to say to someone, I am straight, I am bi, even though it's a label, it's very clear, people know what that means. There's also so much gray area in all of that as well. But it does help people understand, oh, okay, I have a better understanding of what your sexual preferences are. And I know better how to engage with you and interact with you and please you, et cetera. So I think it's great to have the definitions and the titles, but it's also fun to explore consensually. So I love the gray area that you spoke of as well. And also in the world of sex play and kinks and fetishes, that has the power to be really intimidating to someone because there's not safety. And so, yes, explore and be curious and also know that you can say no or stop things at any point in time.
Yeah, that's important. Okay, so for a second, let's push in on it a little bit. Let's have some fun with it. Let's say I am like, Serena, I'm really like turned on by this ice cream thing that I saw in a porn or in a book or whatever. And I don't know if it's a kink or a fetish. How would we define it? You'd be like, okay, what do you like to do with ice cream or something like that? That'd be probably the first step, right?
Yeah, so... If it's something that it's just crossing your path, I would say that's more likely going to be a kink. Now, if it's something that you sexualize or get turned on by and think about it often and make those connections in your body sensually, then it may turn into a fetish for you. So if you do it, explore it, love it, think about it, fantasize about it, want it to be a part of your sexual activity, it turns into kind of a fetish.
Okay. So basically, right, to boil that down even more, like into Idiotville for myself, but also to like for the audience to have it like a better grip on it, I guess. If I'm like, oh, cool, like mint chocolate chip really did it for me that one time, and maybe I come back to it like once a month or every couple of weeks or twice a year, and I'm like, cool, that's more along the lines of like a kink, right? But if I'm like driving around and like buying every single store out of mint chocolate chip, then we're all into fetish territory, right?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah, if you're eating ice cream that's vanilla and all you can think about is the mint chocolate chip and you can only enjoy your vanilla ice cream if you're imagining it's mint chocolate chip, then you are in fetish territory.
Okay. Yeah. And just to like cap that off with the ice cream thing, like I wasn't even trying to be like, I wasn't talking about eating it, people. So use your imaginations, okay? Like we were not eating the mint chocolate chip. Okay, that's all I'm gonna say.
There's so many things you can do with ice cream. I'm into it.
Yeah, 100,000%. From there, I kind of want to dive into a little bit more about how you got, who you are, and how you got started in this field, right? So, what is your origin story with kink and with this work? Was there something that that you saw that really lit you up? Was there experiences you had?
I love this question. And I have been asked this question on a lot of podcast interviews. And I am excited to say that I think I have a different answer for the first time today. So yeah, I'm excited about that. So a little bit of a trigger warning for those people who are listening. When I was 4, I was raped. And then when I was 12, I was molested. And I'm a very well-endowed woman. And so I started growing breasts at a young age and had a lot of men sexualize me. And it was something that I learned through those experiences that it was bad. I learned it was bad. It caused pain. It hurt me. I didn't enjoy it. And as I got older, I then learned, oh, sex can be good and pleasurable, and I think I do enjoy it. And I started my spiritual journey and exploration of life and just kind of getting to know who I am on a deeper and intentional level when I turned 30. And during that time, I met my boss, Alexa, and her husband, Jordan. And I said to Alexa, I'm going to work with you one day. I'm just not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. And I was talking about hiring her as my coach to heal through the sexual experiences that I've had. And I didn't know that I'd end up actually like working with her and working for her. But I also have a history. My background is I was a hairstylist for 15 years, and people tell their hairstylist everything. And I was coaching people behind the chair on their sex, love, and relationships for the entire time. And I decided I didn't want to do that anymore. I had met Alexa. I was growing and learning about myself, about life, and the timing just was just right. And I was able to enroll in one of her programs. And around that time, I also met my husband, and he has experience with non-monogamy and kink. And I just dove literally headfirst into everything. I was like, give it all to me. I want to be fully embodied, fully expressed. I don't want to feel shame about my body anymore. And I was just ready to let those layers go and to let those past experiences stop holding me back. And so that's what I did. I set out on that path, and that's what I did. And there are still times that I feel shame or discomfort in my body because I'm human. However, it is so much less.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first of all, sorry to hear about the horrific bullshit that you went through, not once, but twice, right? That's terrible. It's something I think that a lot of people go through some form of abuse, right? And then they don't talk about it. So it's really important that you're insanely vulnerable and open, and it's like massively appreciated. Thank you so much for sharing it. It sounds like to me, and my sort of like whatever sort of like idiot brain in the moment, that you basically like had from a super young age, tragically, like had people attempt or try or maybe even succeed to like take your power away from you in the most vile ways. And then later in life, you sort of not only reclaimed it, but almost like grew it. And that's like, can we dive into that? The idea that your sexuality, practices like kink, meeting like-minded people like you did with your husband and with Alexa, the importance of sort of reclaiming your power through sex and that sort of that energy.
Oh yeah, definitely. I could talk about this for days because
go for it.
What comes up for me when I hear you open up this part of the conversation is self-pleasure and, you know, touching yourself, not just masturbating to the point of orgasm, but feeling pleasure in your body and allowing yourself to feel pleasure and enjoying it and being the one who is giving the pleasure and receiving the pleasure is such a powerful act. And I think it gets lost in translation in our culture with porn and things like, you know, OnlyFans and the dating culture that we have. And I find so many people are very disconnected from their own ability to provide pleasure for themselves. And to me, like that healing practice is one of the I want to say, quickest and easiest ways to heal and start to feel your own power, because you are giving and receiving pleasure and joy and just so many yummy sensations to yourself. And so, yeah, that's like a beautiful starting point. And I'll pause and just see if you have anything to say or add.
Well, again, like, thank you for defining it and also like walking us through it, right? What that should feel like. And again, we talk about this a lot on this show, but it's not as though OnlyFans or porn or whatever, those things are bad. It's just that people are so sort of stuck in like one note, one track. They want that quick hit. They want to like rub one out really quick, and have an orgasm and then move on to fucking whatever episode of Netflix they're on, or back to TikTok, or we're in this sort of, frantic, frenetic, now. And I think what you're saying and moving this conversation into is the idea of slowing down and realizing that, yeah, you can do the fucking rub outs and the one offs and have fun, like blow your load, however that looks for you. And totally go to Pornhub and whatever. Sure. But you can also like slow that down and almost like harness that and have better orgasms and be more mindful and less stressed out. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Those are all symptoms of self-pleasure practices.
Cool.
And just to double down on it, it is an amazing way to feel your value, to feel your worth, and to feel your power. I mean, our sexual organs create life. They are powerful. Mm-hmm. And so just to take a moment to honor the pure magic that we are capable of as humans is incredible. And to connect to that in an intentional way, it's life-changing.
Yeah, totally. And I think more people, especially with what you do, but also with what some of your contemporaries do, Bryn, who's been on the show as well.
Oh, I love her.
She's awesome. She's so awesome. And I think I've like chased Alexa around about coming on the show. So, if you see her, she's still got a spot. But I think what you guys do is so important, because you are, you know, putting that information out there, but also willing to teach people, to slow down and be less frenetic and crazy and whatever, because there is value in that. And I think with you guys out there doing the damn thing, right, there are other people as well, that are sort of in the ether now. So I think, slowly but surely, people are waking up to the idea of self-pleasure in a more thoughtful, slowed down, valuable kind of way.
Mm-hmm. There's just so much more to this life. Like, wherever you are with dating or sex or relationships or vulnerability, there's so much more accessible. And I think sometimes people just need permission and a reminder of that. And it feels important to just name for those people who are listening that it's okay if you rub one out and go to Pornhub, and if that is your practice and that is all that you are able to do right now for self-pleasure, I encourage you to do that. And I don't want anyone to feel shame or guilt. I just want to shine light on other things that are possible.
Yeah. And even like, you know, the idea of going to Pornhub or, hitting up OnlyFans or going to someone's Instagram that you, or whatever your thing is, wherever you go to get those quick hits, the greatest hits, as I call them, right? you can also go to those same places and even maybe as like a basic sense of slowing down, you can, take your time with it instead of doing the race thing. You can use the same content, but just like tell yourself, like, we're not going to go for the the 2 minute fucking slam jam. We're gonna stretch it out to 5 minutes and then 7 and then 10. And then maybe there's other content on these places.
Yeah.
Where there's like long form shit. So maybe that's like a baby way to start a practice of
That's why
I said that early. Like, there's nothing wrong with going to those places. It's still just getting your fucking, your 90 second or whatever, 2 minute, fucking 5 minute thing, whatever your thing is.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you brought that back up because it is important.
Yeah, I can add to this. But first, I just have to tell you, I love your commentary. It's so fun and playful. I'm like, yes, give me more of this.
Well, there's 20 plus episodes of this crazy bullshit of mine. If I can, there's a back catalog.
Amazing.
But thank you very much.
Yeah, totally. So I'd like to introduce the concept of edging, because you're kind of skating around that. And so I just want to introduce it to the audience. And another sidestep to that is something that I call the pleasure cap. So edging is when you're really close to orgasming. Let's say an orgasm is a 10. When you recognize that buildup is happening and maybe you're at a 7 or an 8, slow down or stop altogether and allow yourself to feel what that feels like, to feel how good it is, to just let the energy and the juices permeate in your body and experience that and build that anticipation, build the energy. And so that's kind of what you were alluding to, is edging. And there's so many benefits to doing that as a practice, especially for men. And then to shine light for more of the feminine side to things, I have a practice where I push my pleasure cap. And so one of my challenges in this life has been allowing myself to fully receive pleasure. And that comes in any forms. So when happiness is happening and like good things are happening, my insides are uncomfortable because I grew up in chaos and trauma. And so that has been a journey of mine. And so when I am in a self-pleasure practice, I push my, what I call my pleasure cap. So when I have an orgasm, for example, in the past, I used to just throw my dildo away or like throw my vibrator away and be like, ugh, I'm done. I like felt pleasure. It's over. And I couldn't handle it. Like old me couldn't handle it. And so I started to just push it out a little bit longer. Like, how can I stay in this pleasure for 30 seconds longer, for a minute longer, for 2 minutes longer? And now I've exceeded that pleasure cap more and more and more, and it's still growing and it's amazing. So I just wanted to share those practices because I think they can be really beneficial. And if you do them and you try them, let me know how it goes.
Yeah. let us all know, because that's powerful shit, right? Like the pleasure cap thing is kind of a game changer. You know, edging, I think, at least from the male standpoint, it definitely makes sure when you finally do allow yourself to come or have an orgasm, like you it's definitely stronger when you do that. And I would imagine that it's sort of the same with women, but the pleasure cap thing, like that's, now we're getting into like some fucking next level stuff that anybody can really attempt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love that. So I think what's a good, if someone's like, they know that they're bored, right? Because I feel like this is happening, at least with a lot of the people that I talk to around the show, a lot of women that I talk to just that maybe listen to an episode and like DM me or the show and just want to talk about their experiences. I feel like there's a lot of boredom, fear, and maybe they're with a partner and they're just kind of, I don't know, in a place that feels fucking stale. Right. They don't want to hurt someone's fucking feelings. Mm-hmm. They're not sure if they want to be like gagballed and fucking thrown around, but they know that they're kind of done with like the missionary, tell me how you like it, baby, kind of fucking shit. So where do those people sort of ease into it or jump right in, like whatever their comfortability level? What are some baby steps or some, you know, from you, a professional who's lived this fucking shit, how do they get into it?
Yeah, such a valid question and really happy to answer it. And the important thing is that for those who are listening, I want you to feel safe. And so if I say like buy a ball gag, that may not be the next baby step for everybody. But if someone wants to explore that, I mean, there's so many places that you could go with this. So instead of giving a bunch of answers, I'm going to give you a tool that can help you figure out your own answers. And so that tool is called the number scale. And let's say you want to be ball gagged. That's a 10. So what is step one? Maybe it is masturbating while thinking about being ball gagged. Maybe it is just opening up your browser and looking at them online. You know, maybe it's fantasizing about it. And then that's where you start. And so whatever the situation is, whatever change gets to happen or is desired in happening, let's say it's a 10, what is one? And then what define those different layers so that you can take and design baby steps that fit your own individual needs and desires so that you can feel safe throughout the entire process of this exploration. And then given that there could be a possibility that it's not for an individual alone, but you're in a partnership or a marriage, like you mentioned. And so the most important thing there is being able to communicate. And we weren't taught about sex properly anyways, in general. And we most certainly were not taught how to communicate about it. And there are so many deep, sticky emotions that can be involved surrounding sex. So there's layers to it. The best advice that I can say is to have a conversation outside of the bedroom with your partner. So never in the heat of the moment, never when there's turn on, not even in the physical bedroom that it can be associated with your sex life. Maybe even outside of the home. Like, hey, there's something I want to talk to you about. When is a good time? You know, you don't want to have the conversation when they have a big work project to do or something else is on their mind. So considering your partner and creating a safe container to have an explorative conversation. And an important part to that as well is going to be setting intentions and coming back to those intentions as often as necessary, even if you feel like you're repeating yourself over and over and over again, do that. So my intention is for us to have better sex. My intention is for me to have my needs met sexually. And when things start to get sticky, you can just say those intentions out loud and say, remember, my intention in this conversation is X, Y, and Z. Even if you're repeating yourself, coming back to those intentions is going to be really powerful in a safe container outside of the bedroom. And communication is something that I know I personally focus on a lot with my clients. And it's a big part of Sex and Love Co. because it is the number one thing that successful relationships are based off of. Lex has polled thousands of people and everybody agrees communication is the number one thing that provides a successful relationship. And so creating the space to just even have a conversation, no matter if it blows up or flops on its face, it is a baby step nonetheless. And it is a step towards creating the sex and love life of your dreams.
Yeah, I mean, incredibly well said, first of all. And I think it's important to state, but let's dive into it a little bit, is you don't need a partner for any of this shit. You know what I mean? You don't need to go and find someone to wear a leather mask or fucking have a whip. I mean, you don't need any of that. You can do all of this stuff and start exploring on your own? Because I know there's a lot of single people out there that have been mistreated or shamed, which we're going to totally get into next, I think. And they just feel like, I need some more excitement. I think I'm into this, but this feels whatever. Like, I think it's important for us to really talk to the single fucks, right? Because myself being one of them, because there's a lot of people who are single. They don't necessarily want a relationship, but they want different, cool, new things. So does the same apply? Like, are they kind of having self conversations? What does that look like?
Yeah. So this is an area where I would suggest educating yourself to start. So I'll just stick with the same example about being being ball gagged. Research that and be curious. Like, what is it about that that turns me on? And what can I learn about it? And, you know, there are workshops and there's so many things available out there in the world. There's places to immerse yourself, and there's companies like the one that I work for that has free content all the time. I think we probably have something about being gagged out there in the content world. So educating yourself is a great place to start. And then there are lots of free quizzes and resources available to help you understand yourself. So in personal development, there's, you know, some power books like The Power of Now, for example. Everybody's read that fucking book. Everyone's read that book who's like in personal development. And so there are some staple tools like that when it comes to sexual development that are out there. And I would encourage single people or people in partnerships to explore those staple tools. And just to name a few of them, the Want, Will, Won't list, the Erotic Blueprint quiz, the Love Languages is another really popularized one. So figuring out what it is that you like. There's also a kink BDSM specific quiz. So you go through and you rate the different things that turn you on, and it spits out, you know, your results and can help you have those titles and those anchors so that you can explore and educate yourself on a deeper level.
Yeah, super important. And I think, you know, those sort of basic steps, right? Everything you mentioned can be really helpful, like ushering in whatever, you know, whatever's coming next for someone who's curious, right? Because I think obviously that's where it starts. I mean, how can people go from starting out, you know, and being sort of in the beginning stages to doing what you did, right? Which is like really sort of reclaiming their sexuality. How do they go to the next level? If they're ready to level up, if they're like, yeah, cool, ball gags, whatever, right? How do they move into, you know, not just the crazier shit, but like mentally more from an empowerment standpoint, how do people really feel as if this is their power, this is their sexuality? What tips would you give people? Because you really, you know, you've been fucking through it.
Yeah. What comes up immediately is being fully embodied in the feelings and sensations. And it's going to come with ego death. It's going to come with discomfort. And it's also going to come with pleasure and euphoria as well. So when I have allowed myself to feel pleasure, I have melted into that space. I have allowed myself to be fully embodied, like every part of my body is feeling pleasure right now. And if, for example, you mentioned shame, if shame or fear is something that you feel, how can you give yourself the space to feel that safely and move it through your body? Because it's all energy. We're energetic beings. We're emotional beings. And so we emote energy and emotions all day, consciously, subconsciously. And what we get to do is be fully embodied with the things that we desire. So as far as reclaiming your power and really taking it to the next level, embodiment is the answer.
Okay. And I think the second part of this same question, really, what do people do when, on one hand, they have a partner that, hey, I like fucking mint chocolate chip and masks and whatever the fucking crazy shit, mm-hmm. right? Whatever. Gummy bears, maybe. I don't know why I'm always using food. I don't know, whatever, but like,
yeah, I'm curious if you have a sweet tooth right now.
Yeah. Well, and I'm diabetic too. So maybe that's some weirdo fucking thing.
Kinky. But,
yeah, sure. Right. So let's say they're bringing these things up or they want to be hit or tied up or, they want to dress up as their favorite character, whatever their thing is. We could be here all day if I keep mentioning, but they bring it up to their partner. And their partner's like, you're a fucking weirdo. You know, I'm not doing that, right? Shame. They're kink shaming them. They're making them feel like shit. One, how do you fight that? And two, for people who are just terrified that that may happen, mm-hmm. how do they get over that? How do they get around that? How do they fucking sort of stay in their power, as it were?
Yeah. So these are very real examples, and a lot of people can stay stuck in that fear and perpetuate the, you know, Netflix porn idol kind of life because of that fear. Fear is very debilitating. And so I recognize the just fucking realness and rawness to this. And I know that it's scary and I've been there and I still feel fear sometimes when I bring things up to my partner. It's not necessarily that it goes away ever, but what I can say is that your individual capacity to holding the fear, to feeling the fear, to honoring it and processing it gets better. And so it feels less and less. So with each conversation or step, you will be more embodied and it will feel less than it does right now. And so just knowing that moving forward from wherever one might be right now is really important. And the worst case scenario is that your partner does kink shame you or whatever it is that happens. And so the best case scenario, though, is what if your partner's into it and you have a merry fucking life being tied up and ball gagged and swung around and, you know, so like, I get it. I get the fear. And it could also be the best case scenario too. And you'll never know unless you do it. And so I would invite whoever's hearing this and you're like, this is me, I would invite you to be really grounded and to love on yourself and build yourself up and just pour into yourself prior to having that conversation so that you are there for yourself and you feel supported no matter what happens and how it shakes out. Because you are responsible for yourself and you're also responsible for your pleasure. And no one else is going to fight for what you're desiring or wanting. It comes down to you. You are responsible for that. And so I hope that that is a little bit of ass kicking mixed with a lot of inspiration. And you're also not alone. Like, another thing is a lot of times people will come to us when they're in these very real life situations. They're not happy with their sex life. Something needs to change. Their sex life is boring. And so there is always an option of seeking outside support and guidance as well if it feels like too much, if it's too scary. So, and it doesn't have to be with me or Sex and Love Co. Like, there's so many amazing people out there and I'm happy to give referrals and support you on this journey in whatever way that I can. So I think I only answered one part of your question. What was the second part?
I have no idea, but I do know that I have, this might be part of it, but let's say the worst case does happen, right? They're like, hey, I'm into this, da 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 da.
Oh, and this was it. This was the second part of the question. Yeah.
I think so, but I think what happens, like, is the reaction, like, should they, if someone's like, that's disgusting, you're a fucking psycho, like, well, this, let's say it's this bad, right?
Well, that's abusive, run.
Right, exactly. So if the person is like, you're weird, or there's some extreme reaction or whatever, is it sort of like, well, fuck you, Doug, I'm out of here? Or is it like, listen, Doug, I need you to understand, like, what are we doing with Doug?
Yeah. Okay, Doug, listen here. yeah, this definitely was the second part of the question. So there is a communication tool that I teach, and it literally moves mountains. And I'm not saying that lightly. It moves fucking mountains in conversation. Maybe you've heard of it. Maybe you haven't. It's called the nonviolent communication technique. Have you ever heard of that, Dustin?
I have, probably, but my, like, you know, brain with a bunch of holes in it is like, not, I can't compute, not like finding that file right now.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So an example of how to, use the template in this scenario would be to say, when you call me weird, I feel hurt. I feel sad. I feel rejected. Whatever, insert whatever emotion is your emotion. So it's when you, I feel, and then you say, I need. So you can say, I need you to be open to having a conversation with me about this. It doesn't have to be now. It can be at another time. Is that something that you're open to? And so it is a way to still honor, number one, what you feel and what you're asking for or what you need. And also, number two, to acknowledge what came up for your partner without just turning it into a fight. So that's why this is called nonviolent communication, because it is a way to honor both participants and keep the original intention alive. And there's an entire book. It's like Dr. Marshall that wrote it. I think I have the book right here. Oh, nope. It is not Dr. Marshall. That is another book. So for those of you who can see the video, I'm showcasing it right now.
Yeah, I've seen that. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have actually read it. I've definitely seen it in my self-care, self-help, Instagram travels, you know?
Totally. When I am in a situation where I'm like, oh, fuck, what do I do? What do I say? I don't know. I could just go to the nonviolent communication technique because it's so supportive. And literally, like I said, it moves fucking mountains. It's insane. And it feels good. Yeah. And you could stumble and you're not going to get it perfect the first time, especially if you're being like called names and put down. But you can practice it also with family, with friends, at work. Just start practicing it so that if that situation arises with your partner in the heat of the moment, you feel more confident in accessing it. And it doesn't feel as awkward when the words leave your mouth.
Yeah. No, I mean, first of all, fuck Doug, because Doug's an asshole. And two, like, I'm totally adding the nonviolent communication book to my Audible queue. So, you know, anybody listening or watching, you guys should too, right? Just to have in your fucking, in your armory, in your arsenal armory, in your, well, either way, mm-hmm. right? It's there. You can draw from it. Cause I think there's probably a lot of times it's not even sexual or whatever that, you want to communicate directly, but you don't know how to cut through the fucking static, right? Mm-hmm. And that seems like such a perfect, you know, stinger missile to do that. So I love that you brought that up.
Totally. It has helped me with my relationships with my family so much. So my dad is very straight and narrow and businessman, you know, typical, but lovely and amazing and unique. I love you, Dad. Middle-aged man. And so he had expectations of how I was to operate as a business lady in the world. And he would always criticize. I felt criticized by his advice for a long time because I used to own my own hair studio. And I made a lot of decisions along the way that were risky and scary. And I was an entrepreneur. I supported myself, lived on my own, etc. So my dad loves me and he wanted me to make the right decisions. So I just started using that technique with him and it totally changed how we communicate. And so I got to say, when you say X, Y, and Z, I feel X, Y, and Z, and I need X, Y, and Z. And I also put a consequence in there for him. I'm like, if you're unable to do this, then this is my next step. It was a boundary.
Yeah. Love that little veiled threat that doesn't feel like a threat, but if you keep doing this, I'm going to be forced to do this. Like, this is great. This is great stuff. And let me just say, I was in the nightlife business for all of my adult life, you know, like for forever. And hairstylists and salon people, women and men are all like the best fucking people to party, like the wildest fucking best clientele to bring into your nightclub. Like everyone's fashion forward and good looking and loves to fucking do shots. It's crazy how that's like a thing. So I just wanted to just throw that out there too.
Yeah, hairstylists are dope.
Yeah, so much fun. Okay, so getting towards the end of the interview at this point, is there, can we talk about what were some of the things when you started embracing kink in your personal life, some of the practices, if you feel comfortable, like bringing up stuff you were into then versus maybe some of the practices and like stuff that you're into now. What is your, again, only if you're comfortable, what does your sort of kink search history look like? Mm-hmm. Just because I think it's important to bring that shit up. First of all, it's fucking fun. I can't wait to hear what you say. Mm-hmm. But two, there's people out there that are like, oh, cool. I'm in, what's, and then maybe like they've never heard of it before. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah, absolutely. The word that comes up when I hear you ask this question is evolution. Like, what is the evolution of my kink journey? Mm-hmm. And so I started really exploring with a very common kink relationship called daddy baby. And so my partner was daddy and I was baby. And that doesn't necessarily mean that there's age play happening. That is a common confusion with this kink dynamic. But what it means is that I am the submissive. And for me, what my flavor of it is I like to dress up and put on cute, like pink clothes with bows and, you know, teddy bears and glitter and just be a little fucking kid. And because of my childhood, it is one of the most healing experiences that I've had, is because I was able to really tap into my inner child and like throw temper tantrums. And in the layer of daddy baby, there were a couple other relationships that organically surfaced that we got to explore. Another one being brat and brat tamer, because as I've said in this episode already, I experienced a lot of trauma. And so I wasn't able to really have temper tantrums or talk back because I was in an abusive home. And so I was able to do that. And it was incredibly healing for me, like massively. And I'm so grateful for that. And then another relationship that kind of organically came up was slave and slave master. And that's something that I've moved away from as my journey has evolved. But I am a sexplorer. So I like exploring things and I get turned on by trying new things. So that's one of my like fetishes or taboos or kinks, insert whatever feels good for you.
Sure.
So like if I've, for example, if I've, how do I explain this? When I was single, I liked to make out with people of different varieties. I'm like, oh, I've like never made out with somebody with dreads before. And then I'd get like fetishize it and just get turned on by people with dreads. And I'm like, oh, yes, I'm manifesting this. And I loved the chase of it. And so exploring new things, and that has evolved and grown. Definitely, it has evolutionized in my sex life. And we also explored a lot of exhibitionism and voyeurism. So I enjoy to be seen, which is the exhibitionism. We have gone to swingers clubs. I also have an OnlyFans page, and I enjoy just showing my skin and showing my body. I have like risky photos on Instagram, and that can be really edge pushing for a lot of people in general. I've had many women say, gosh, when you started this journey, I unfollowed you. And then I sat with it and I learned that there was something there for me. And now I'm so thankful for you posting those, you know, posts and shares and photos, because we're here now and I learned about myself, and I've been a warm, safe space for people to have their own journeys through. And I would say that that has definitely evolved, because then I got an OnlyFans page and now I'm being seen by lots of people online, and I wear less clothes to the swingers club. And so those are probably the main kinks or taboos. And another evolution I'd say is I'm a switch, which means I like to be dominant and submissive. And I haven't explored much of the dominating energy, but it's something that my partner and I have been having conversations surrounding and that I look forward to diving into. So there'll probably be more to come there. But I think I needed to fully immerse myself in being a submissive first, and a really, really good dominant knows what it feels like to be submissive.
Yeah, no, fucking awesome. Yeah, that's great. Well, and you know, the person who's unfollowing you, that person is a Doug, and we don't fuck with Doug. Goodbye. Fuck off, Doug. So fuck them. And I appreciate you sharing that, because it's important, I think, to get that out there on record. I love it. I love all of it. So in closing, I'm sorry, go ahead. You're going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that it's also okay. Like, I feel completely okay with people unfollowing if I'm not their cup of tea, and if it's sure, edge pushing, or if it brings stuff up for them. And I think it's important to just highlight as we're ending the show, because this ties into Doug. It ties into Doug and that whole situation, and like the kink shaming, and you know, not everybody is gonna be on board with absolutely everything that you desire. And so just knowing that, normalizing it, and mm-hmm. also knowing that it's okay for you to desire the things that you desire, to want the things that you want, and to ask for them. Like, everything is okay. It's all serving, and it'll come full circle for you, you know? So I just wanted to sure. to kind of highlight that, because it is a normal part of the sexual development journey.
Yeah, I mean, the Dugs play a role, right? We can push past the Dugs. The Dugs can make us stronger. It just, again, it's sort of a way to take your power back, right? Mm-hmm. Or to stay in your empowerment, in your power.
Yeah, because it's not you. It's they're not ready. Right. You know, they're not comfortable in their bodies, for example. And so they're not ready to see someone who is comfortable in their body.
Yeah. It's not you, it's Doc.
Yeah.
1,000%. So and with that being said, and in closing, I'm wondering, I always love to sort of cap the episodes off with sort of a powerful sort of hopefully like sucker punch. In a good way. It's a good sucker punch. Okay, guys. The episode's very kink focused, so let's roll with it. Is there some practical sort of real world from the gut, from the heart advice that you could give to someone who may be watching or listening that is having trouble embracing their dark side, as it were, right? Is having trouble accepting that they might be into this or that or the other. What would you say to them to help pull them across the starting line?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, you're not alone in the world. So many people feel this way. And it can be as simple as finding community. And I will tell you that when I started this sexual development journey and started shifting my persona and how people see me, even in my friend circle, I was blown away once I started talking about it. Then other people started talking to me about stuff too. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I didn't realize you were kinky as hell. Like, okay. And so I found my people. And so just knowing that you're not alone and your people are out there is really, really important. And it is just a matter of you being brave enough to open and be vulnerable and be authentic. And if you're not comfortable and you don't fully accept yourself, and how can other people do that too? And that's kind of the sucker punch. So like, it's only awkward if you make it awkward. And if you don't love and accept yourself, then how can you allow other people to do that too? And so I invite you to take a closer look at what parts of yourself you're not fully accepting and loving, and be curious about how you can love those parts of you and what you need to accept those parts of you.
Amazing. Serena Rose, thank you so much for being on Sex Party with me this week. Where can people find you? Where can people work with you?
So you can find me on Instagram at Spiritual Sex Coach. I love receiving DMs. If you heard this episode and it touched you, please reach out to me. It inspires me to keep showing up and sharing vulnerably. I want to hear from you. I love you. And I'm happy to send any resources or additional information your way through the DMs. So just hit me up.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you so much for being here. We will definitely, definitely talk soon.
Thank you so much, Dustin.
Humongous thank you to my guest this week, Serena Rose. I mean, Jesus, does it get any more rock star than that? Thank you. Thank you a ton for being on the show and being open and vulnerable and killing it and just providing a fuck ton of value. Go check her out. Tons of awesome things over on her IG. If you guys are digging Sex Party, if you're loving these episodes, these guests like Serena, you can show that if you wish. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Spotify, all of the audio platforms. You can leave a rating. You can leave a review if you want to. You can tell your friends, hey, there's this wacky show I listen to. I watch it. You know, you should too. If you're watching on YouTube, hello. How are you? Are we doing okay? Great. If you're watching on YouTube, you can subscribe to the channel. You can like the video. You can leave a comment. These things help. You don't have to do them. I appreciate it if you do. You can always DM me on Instagram with all of your fun and crazy bullshit. And as always, I will see you right back here next week.
Thanks for listening. The party continues next week. Click subscribe and let's make this a regular thing. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter @SexPartyFM. Follow Dustin @DustinRibka.